We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, October 21 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And yeah, we're ready to roll on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. If you're listening and living in South Louisiana, pretty good chance your favorite team won this weekend. This has been one heck of a football season, and I don't think the fun is done just yet. Not even a little bit. And so as we welcome you in, I'm going to lead with LSU football, but the Saints, they're on deck. They won't be far behind in this program. Big wins from both programs and franchises on the road. One, maybe more expected than the other. And let's lead with LSU. Nearly three touchdown favorites, and they cover the spread, and they continue to just throw a blanket over defenses across the SEC and the nation. Joe Burrow, four more touchdown passes, over 300 yards through the air, showing his backside to Stark Vegas like he just don't care. And I'm beginning to realize we've never quite seen anything like this before. I don't just mean the offensive productivity. I don't just mean the charisma, because LSU, even in recent years, has had some cats come through that grab a lot of national headlines, from Fournette to Peterson. I don't know if anybody's been quite as charismatic as the Honey Badger, especially with the nickname and the style of play. But I'm really starting to think that we've never quite seen a one-year turnaround like this. One player causing such a turnaround for one program. And I understand that if you didn't have the luxury of listening to it on Acadiana Sports Station, you probably had to watch it. And yes, that means that you got an earful of Gary Danielson. Get used to it. You'll have it again this weekend against Auburn. And if you're watching it November the 9th, as was announced today, it'll be a 2:30 CBS kickoff, LSU and the Crimson Tide. And I'm going to get to that matchup here quickly. But my point is this. Danielson, Nessler, the entire broadcasting booth couldn't get over just how different LSU is. And I don't blame them. They haven't had LSU 230 with any frequency this season. The rest of the country, I think they've already gotten the memo. This isn't your slightly older brother's LSU football team. And no, they didn't run it on Saturday the way they did against Florida. But wow, the short passing game was electric. It was a little bit tough to watch inside the red zone, right? Settling for field goals on the first three opportunities. But let me remind you, LSU scored the football every time it had possession in the first half. We've never seen a one-year turnaround that could be directly traced to a one-year player like this. We've never seen it at LSU. Have we seen it across the country? Maybe. Cam Newton certainly made things different on the plains awfully quick. I think I could probably say something similar about Jameis Winston, although that Florida State program was competing pretty darn well before him in the ACC. We've had one year just supernova, once-in-a-generation players that have come through before. But what Burrow's doing right now, it's on a completely different level. And it's changed the expectation for LSU football. And the defense is now starting to come to the party. For my 2 cents, I thought that was the best all-around defensive performance since the Georgia Southern opener. LSU was magnificent. A garbage touchdown late shouldn't taint a game in which the defense just piled on. And it was as if Mississippi State was still running that antiquated offense with Nick Fitzgerald last year in Tiger Stadium, although we know they were a little more evolved, trying the Ford pass more than 10 or 12 times. In Stark Vegas this time around, LSU got after the quarterback. I thought Chaisson was dynamite. You saw Rashard Lawrence scoop up from a fumble. Jacoby Stevens, a co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week with a one-handed snag. Christian Fulton, Derek Stingley, at times exceptional. Just about the one player and the one sore spot, I would say, on this defense right now is number five. And I'm not throwing pre-shade at Kerry Vincent Jr., but that nickel spot's something that's continuing to evolve. For what it's worth, I thought Vincent actually had decent coverage more times than not, but it always seemed like a state receiver was going around him, over him. It wasn't a great day, I think, in Starkville for Kerry Vincent Jr. But by and large for the Tigers, it was. Anytime you can advance to 7-0, you're the number two team in the country, and your offense is humming along like this one, you've got something special that's brewing. And I think Joe Burrow is more than just the reason why. You'd have to go several rungs down on the ladder to figure out who's even second in line. He's been incredible. And that brings me to Tua Tagovailoa. High ankle sprain, ankle surgery. Nick Saban saying today, quote, there's no real timetable for his return. These things are pretty unpredictable at this point, end quote. Saban went on to say he's hopeful, as is the Tide program and the fans, the legions of Alabama fans that did not go to Alabama. Yeah, all of them. They're all hopeful that it'll be a 10-day period until he can return. Stop me if this sounds familiar. Last year, Tua, uncertain how much he was going to play, how effective he would be in Tiger Stadium, and he was outstanding for the first three quarters of that football game while it was still remotely competitive. So what am I telling you? We're all gearing up for a ball game, November the 9th. Matchup of the century, part two. LSU's best chance at beating Bama since November of 2011. At least that's what it's starting to feel like. And will Tua Tagovailoa play? Are we going to get to see the Star Wars-type shootout between Burrow and Tua? My gut tells me yes. But this continues to look better and better for LSU. Just about the one thing that nobody should forget about as we all start to ready ourselves for Tigers Tide in T-Town. Oh yeah, pesky little matchup with Auburn. Pesky little top 10 matchup that's coming to Baton Rouge for another 2:30 kickoff this Saturday. It gets really easy to bury Auburn after the loss at the Swamp a couple of weeks ago. That's real low-hanging fruit. I wouldn't take it. Wouldn't bite that apple if I were you. I know that LSU is a prohibitive favorite again in this one. The LSU offense dictates that they should be. And yes, the team has had an extra bye week this time around. In years past, hey, this would have been your eighth straight game in 8 weeks. You'd have to deal with exhaustion, fatigue, injuries that just keep nagging. I think LSU's in a pretty good spot this time around. The bye week helped. Bringing Chase on, Lawrence, so many of these defenders, Divinity, bringing them back around fairly gingerly and slowly after the Texas game, that has helped. And so I think LSU will have all hands on deck. And by all accounts, Terrace Marshall Jr. coming back to join an already potent wide receiving core. Everything is lining up toward that matchup November 9. The thing of it is, you better make sure that you watch your six and take care of October 26. This Saturday against Auburn, Bo Nix coming to town, an offense that was humiliated in the Swamp. LSU has the right type of ingredients to make that happen again in Tiger Stadium. Will they do it? Can they maintain that razor-sharp focus? And can Joe Burrow continue to demolish LSU school records? Show your backside as much as you want, big fella. If you keep doing this, maybe they'll just give you a Heisman that looks a little different in 2019. Because I will tell you, that is the funniest meme I have seen about LSU football in a long, long time. That bronze Heisman statue with the Joe Burrow pants down, may that live in infamy. And Burbank Joe, just keep doing what you do. Because on the other side of this break, I want to discuss just how popular he has become in LSU lore. It's a very real conversation and one I think we'll have a lot of fun with. Big show today. We got 2.5 hours. We're going to lay it all out there for you. Gus Kattengill coming aboard live from New Orleans in exactly 20 minutes. The Saints undefeated with Teddy Bridgewater starting in the absence of Drew Brees and with a huge assignment against the Chicago Bears defense that had been rolling. Sean Payton aced it and absolutely helped us reimagine what this Saints offense can be even in a short interim without Alvin Kamara. So Gus Kattengill coming aboard at 4:30. Ruff and Rodrigue at 5:15. and James Buers, all in on prep sports at straight up 6 o'clock. Do not go anywhere. It's going to be a large show on this Monday. And after a quick timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love for Relief Windows. Thinking windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana. Think Relief Window.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Time to talk beloved players in LSU football history, and you better believe, as we bounce back in, it's a hall inspired, I should say, by Joe Burrow. I got to thinking, CD, always dangerous with me, but I still do it. Yesterday and Saturday, it just jumped off the screen at me how much, I mean, local and national love that Burrow is getting. And it took me back to last year, not that long ago, when we were all discussing the fact that Devin White was very quickly becoming the most beloved player in LSU history. And I'm not telling you a year later that he's not. But what we're seeing with Burrow now, I just think we can have a very fun discussion about where some of these guys rank in the pantheon. And it's an evolving pantheon of beloved LSU players. So let's hit the music, then I'll ask a question. Exciting and new. Your sink or swim question of the day: who is the most beloved player in LSU football history? We're not giving you options. This isn't multiple choice and you choose. You just call us up and let us know. And I will tell you right now, YP, you people out there in listener land, we are getting rampant response on Twitter as well as on Facebook. So let's have it aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline as well. Call us up and let us know what you think. We got time. 706-0111. Most beloved player in LSU football history. Clint, go.
All right, I think this one was way too easy. When you kind of threw it at me, I had to kind of throw it out there right out the gate. We got to go with Kevin Faulk, largely because of the fact, just the impact that he had when you look back at how things were back in the 90s when he was part of that program. He helped make LSU the place to be again after a while where it wasn't necessarily that. Now we look at this team, this program added a whole bunch of legacy because of Kevin Faulk making it the place to be.
Clinton, you grew up in what city?
Carrancrow. There's a little bit of bias.
You went to what high school?
Carrancrow High School.
All right. Just check in there. You say it's way too easy.
Yeah.
I don't think you had to look outside of your backyard to go with Feezy K there, but it's a very, very good selection. Let's take some more. 706-0111. Going with Faulk is not a bad idea, but I will tell you right now, I compiled a list of about 8 guys, and I'm not going to run through the laundry list right now because some of our calls probably want to go in these directions. Doing my best not to steal your thunder. It's one of my fourth quarter New Year's resolutions. I won't steal your thunder as often anymore. I will, however, suggest that the Honey Badger belongs very high on this list. And what's interesting about it is we have sometimes, historically, there's a clean-cut version of who these guys should be. I'm not sure that Tyrann Mathieu, and he'll admit the battles he was having in college off the gridiron, I'm not sure he fits the mold. But I don't know that anybody's also had a persona, a nickname, and then his play lived up to the persona quite like Tyrann Mathieu and the Honey Badger, who just didn't give a you-know-what between the lines. He was incredible. I think the Honey Badger's way up there on the list of most beloved players in LSU football history. I've got some more, but I'm not going to load the full clip yet. Let's get out to you. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Matt, thank you for waiting. What's your answer?
Hey, man, the Honey Badger takes what he wants, right? Okay? Always. Mine is going to be, Jacob Hester. You know, Hester was, you know, really the face of that team in the early 2000s, just, you know, hard-nosed. It's not very often you get a fullback type to really lead your team that way. And I know we all love Hester over here, and if that ball got inside the 5, he was getting it, and nobody was stopping him. Even for his size, that guy had a motor, and he really, really was a face of that team.
It's a great answer. Hey, we had him on the show about a week ago. Matt, thanks for the call. There it is. Matt's weighed in. He's got Jacob Hester. I'll give you one of the other names that I've got in my queue here. He played alongside Hester. He is the most decorated defensive player in LSU football history. Glenn Dorsey. Putt, as he's affectionately known. I actually played several times over against Glenn Dorsey as he was coming up at East Ascension High School. Hard to imagine that within a 2 or 3 year span, coming out of Baton Rouge, and both of them played football, but I think we all know that Glenn Big Baby Davis really, made his bones on the hardwood. But Big Baby coming out of U High in Baton Rouge, and then from Ascension Parish, Glenn Dorsey, two guys just with Baryshnikov-type feet, an unbelievable agility and movement, and they were that big. I got to see both of those guys from a very, very young age. I think Glenn Dorsey belongs on this list of most beloved players in LSU football history. But I'm not just a slave to my generation. I've got guys that go a bit further back. I'm betting you do as well. Hit us up. Let us know. It's a good call for Matt. He's got Jacob Hester. Clint's got Kevin Faulk. I'm answering the Honey Badger, but I accept other answers, and I'll take them. 706-0111. While we wait on you, we got a few right now that I'll shout out from social media. Jamie G on Facebook, Faulk. Although being from Opelousas, Devery Henderson will always be our favorite. Yeah, Devery Henderson has done something that every Louisiana kid basically dreams of doing. And I mean dreams, right? Starring for LSU, winning a national championship, winning the only championship in franchise history with the Saints. Devery Boo Boo Henderson's a really good answer there. Robert D., if Burrow keeps this up, he will be by far. And Chris W., Jacob Hester. The reason for this question is the rapid rise of Joe Burrow. Because I think it's funny because I asked this question maybe 4 weeks ago. Rank your top three quarterbacks in LSU football history. And we were trying to figure out where to slot Burrow. Like 4 or 5 weeks later, that's already a different conversation. Where Burrow belongs all time. And he's got a chance to be one of the all-time most beloved players because he has almost single-handedly transformed LSU's offense and, by extension, their team. Let's keep taking submissions. We're going to get out. So the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Phil, you're up next. Most beloved player in LSU history for you.
How about Tommy Casanova from my alma mater, Notre Dame High School in Crowley? Only three-time All-American at LSU and probably one of the best athletes to ever come out of the state of Louisiana.
Phil, I always maintain that there are certain athletes that can span generations, and their size, skills, they would translate. I would argue that Dr. Billy Cannon and Dr. Tommy Casanova are two such candidates. That's a great answer. Thank you, Phil. That's a really good one. And a shout-out to the Pios there. All right, we had Greg aboard. Greg, we lost you. Greg and everybody else, give us a call back. We got some time. 706-0111. I've got Tommy Casanova written down on this page in front of me. We'll still never forget, as long as I live, over at Oakbourne Country Club a couple of years ago, emceeing a Q&A with Dr. Tommy Casanova and asking him about DBU, and he looked at me in front of hundreds of people, including David Toms, at a gala banquet table right in front of us and said, some version of, son, what the hell is DBU? And he was not joking. People around the room laughed. Dr. Tommy Casanova did not laugh. I explained to him that it's defensive back university, and for crying out loud, dude, you're the godfather. And then we started to have some real fun. That's a great answer, Dr. Tommy Casanova. All right, let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tony, who you got for us?
What about Josh Reed?
The pride of Rain High School and owner of about 90 catches in one game at Alabama 1 year. That's a good one. See, Clint, here's what I'm going to point out right now. God bless local sports talk radio.
Yes.
Seriously. We've now had answers. Kids that went to Karen Crow High,
yep.
Opelousas High, Notre Dame of Acadia Parish, and now Rain High School.
Yeah.
And all of them absolute beast. So I'm just wondering what's taking somebody that long to give us Allie Broussard. Acadiana High, are you snoring on me?
Exactly.
A Monday. I'll give you this as well. I had down Billy Cannon, Dr. Tommy Casanova, Jerry Stovall, who, of course, was not only a runner-up for the Heisman but became head coach, I think Charles Alexander belongs on this list. No back has ever been run into the ground more summarily in an LSU uniform than that man. Yes, that includes Leonard Fournette, but Lenny deserves a nod on this list as well. Patrick Peterson, I think, deserves some respect on his name on a list like this. But I'm kind of liking a core grouping, CD, of Kevin Faulk, Jacob Hester, the Honey Badger, and Glenn Dorsey from the modern era, Dr. Billy Cannon, Tommy Casanova from, let's just say, the last millennium. And there's probably a few that we're forgetting. I don't have any doubt about that. That's a pretty solid grouping right there.
It really is. It's probably the closest thing we could have to like an LSU football or maybe even all of LSU athletics, kind of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, see, then you just really opened your mouth and inserted foot. Come on now. We're gonna do an all-around athletics Mount Rushmore and not talk about Shaq and
Skip Bertman,
Chris Jackson, Skip Bertman, Albert Bell, and McDonald. Come on now.
This is a conversation we're going to have another day.
You played yourself, kid. Yes, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll pick back up on the most beloved LSU players ever and where Burrow is starting to rank. We will get back to our promise. But on the other side of this break, the Saints displayed dominance in the Windy City yesterday. We must discuss, and we will, with Gus Cattingill. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Kareem Hunt has been cleared by the NFL to begin practicing with his Cleveland Browns teammates. He, though, still has to serve two games of...
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Clint, at this point, don't change the man's intro music. Don't change the time of the guests. Maybe don't even change your socks. If the Saints keep winning with Teddy Bridgewater, let's just keep doing what we're doing. That means it's time to get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Gus Cattingill, host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN 100.3 in the Big Easy. Gus, you're a superstitious man, right?
I can be at times. I get called El Gato Negro because apparently when I talk about something, if something goes bad, I get blamed for it. So I guess there's superstition around me.
The black cat even on this side of the border. All right, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Gus, the offense... Mm-hmm. With Latavius Murray, 30-plus touches, how do you reflect on the way this thing played out and the way that Peyton used Murray?
Yeah, look, man, I'm sure you probably referred to it already today on your show. One of the best coaching jobs that Sean Payton's done, really, I think, the last several weeks, and just continues to really show, I think, and I might have referred to it with you already, maturity. I've used that in terms of his coaching. Growth has been another word that I've used as well. He's just become a better head coach. Look, we've seen the NFL, Ben, so many of these people want the next McVay, the next great play caller, and, you know, innovative things. But what you're seeing with a lot of these teams that have gone that route, you have to be a head coach as well, right? I mean, Freddie Kitchens in Cleveland, it's great. You can draw all these things up on the whiteboard. Can you manage the team as well? And that goes into building a locker room. That goes into the scouting department. That goes into getting your team prepared, as Sean Payton said last week in his conference calls, that this starts not now. This started in OTAs, in minicamp, getting the team ready, having the plans together. He constantly refers to in May and June to a whiteboard with players at the ready, if players get injured and where they go, and they constantly update. He's prepared. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. And to your point specifically, look, he was smart about it, right? I mean, he called a great game plan, and Latavius Murray, he kind of knows what he can and can't do. Even he said it at the end of the game. He called some runs that he shouldn't have. Outside run. That's not who he is. Keep Murray between the guards, keep him inside the tackles, and you're going to see a lot of the success that he had. So even despite having, I think, called a good game, even he says, look, there's things that I can do better and put these guys in better position. But to me, quite honestly, in the Bridgewater time right now, he has been calling games that were pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Gus, less than a month ago on this program, you and I had a conversation about the worrisome Saints offensive line. Everything good now?
Yeah, look, I tell you, it's incredible. Again, it's really about twofold, right? A, they have to step up and play better. I mean, that's something that needs to happen. I mean, you can't hold every single time. I think a lot of it, though, is just, look, you know, you got a new quarterback. There's probably stress to you all week. You have to protect. You have to probably hold on a little bit longer. Drew knows where to go with the football before he snaps it. He knows the play to audible to beat the defense that he sees 90% of the time. Is Joel right? No. Most of the time, yes. So I think it's different trying to adjust to a new quarterback, to adjust to his cadence, when he calls it, how long he holds on to it. He holds on longer than Drew. So there was an adjustment period. And I think also, though, it's the play calling, understanding how to help him out. You noticed after those first few games, a lot of holding calls and penalties, you started seeing Teddy Bridgewater roll out more. You saw him getting rid of the ball quicker, you know, hitting the tight end, hitting crossing routes, doing things that helped him have success. You saw yesterday, Brian Baldinger this morning posted a video on a route that had Michael Thomas as the lone receiver, but he kept nine to protect Teddy Bridgewater. So, uber-duber, you know, max protect, put nine in there to help him. So, I think it's just smart. Again, it's why I keep calling it mature. So many times, man, Ben, you and I will put on a game and we'll watch a quarterback struggle. What is the coach doing to help him? You know, he's not putting empty backfield, spreading and going, look, I'm Sean Payton. We throw the ball around. I get your Teddy. You're flinging it, you know. Not a single game, man, has he had to throw the ball 35, 45 times to try to stay in the game. So that's why I mean when I say mature and just a very good game plan all the way around.
We're joined by Gus Kattengill live from New Orleans on 103.7 The Game. Before we leave that side of the ball, Gus, your understanding of how the team's going to deal with Alvin Kamara as well as Jared Cook moving forward.
I mean, again, I'll see you against Atlanta. I mean, there's absolutely no reason for me going into last week. Alvin Kamara success comes from being able to plant, accelerate, juke, run over with strength. That's all on that ankle, man. I mean, Tua just had a procedure done on a high ankle sprain. You know, we know that his injury is high ankle sprain right. That's all I needed to hear. And then you add Sean Payton 2 weeks ago saying after the game that he tweaked the knee. That's really all I need to hear. I thought the Bears game was laying out, right? If that was the only game you lost in the time without Drew Brees, I'll take it. You could go 6-2 into the bye. I'm not counting a win against the Cardinals. I get it, still the NFL, but you should have more talent. And at home, that crowd, it's going to be hard for Kyler Murray to go in there and win. So if that would have been the only game he lost, no problem. I need him the four straight out of the bye. I need him healthy to go four straight, in which you're going to be division opponents. You could wrap up the division in the end of in November. Here's the thing. The Panthers finally got their bye this week. They're only a game back, right? I mean, but going into this weekend. So it's not like you had a ton of separation on the Panthers. So I need them healthy. Go take care of your division. It's why you have Murray. It's why you have Taysom Hill. It's why I thought you see a lot of number seven this weekend. You need him to rest and get healthy. And if you didn't play him this week, you basically are giving him a month off. So he's going to have fresh legs, hopefully be healthier, and those injuries are going to be gone. That's the thing you need to do.
I continue, Gus, to be pleasantly surprised by the red zone target Taysom Hill has become. Yeah. That, for me, has been a lot of fun. Hey, while we've got you, let's go to the defensive side. Out of the resurgence that we're seeing with Dennis Allen's group, what feels, I hate to say, the least sustainable, but what do you need to continue to see to believe it?
Ooh, that's a good question, right? So the D-line is killing it right now, whether it's just even pressures or just stopping the run. Seems like a very solid bunch, and it doesn't just seem anymore, right, Ben, where it's just Cam Jordan and everybody else. I think you're seeing a secondary that's kind of finding the way to make some plays. Lattimore's played spectacular. You're seeing Williams be able to finally make some plays, and Von Bell's really kind of excelled in whatever role they're having him right now, and it's almost like an aggressive role to sort of go in there, stop the run, and make some plays in the passing game. So that's been spectacular. And then you look at, I would say the linebacking core would be the way to answer your question, but then I look at Pro Football Focus's tweet today about DeMario Davis. He had the highest-rated defensive game by any Saints defender, and he's just crushing it and killing it. So I was probably going to say I need to see more from the secondary, but every game they seem to be making the play. I'd say, well, let me see more from the linebacking play. Well, DeMario Davis is kind of doing their job, and You've seen the D-line sort of do it. But I would probably say in those areas, do I need to see more to believe it? Look, that secondary is going to be tested a little bit more coming up. Let's see if they can continue to do it.
We're finishing up with Gus Kattengill. All right, brother, go big picture with me. We understand the 49ers are undefeated, the Saints one loss in the NFC. Who else do you expect when it's all said and done, week 16, week 17? Who else is there contending with the Saints for a bye week in that conference?
I honestly, I know there's a lot of talk about the Packers right now and the 49ers. We've been yet to see, obviously, what happens in their division once a couple of division games start going on. But I don't know if it's just because I think people forget how good they are in terms of the past. But I like Minnesota still. Look, Dalvin Cook's an explosive player. He's almost like Vera Kamara. They're starting to get their passing game going. They're a physical football team. And on defense, they can play when things kind of go their way. And it's a tough place to go play over there. So I think they'll still be around. I don't buy Dallas. I get to have the opportunity to do so. But I guess, look, the Packers have only lost one. So at the end of the day, that goes. But you look at the teams that they played, compare it to the Saints and compare it to other teams, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Saints-Vikings that are 1-2.
Well, we've seen that one before. Around earlier, 2 years ago. We'll see if that happens this January. As always, Gus, you know we appreciate you, man. Have a great night.
For sure, man. Thank you, man.
He's Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover, and that's still a dynamite title for a Sports Talk radio show. We're going to hit our final break of the hour. LSU, check. Saints, check. I'm pretty sure we air games for a franchise that's now going to its second World Series in 3 years. You bet your backside. We're talking Astros when we return. So stick with us. We'll take your phone calls on Tuve and the Stros as well. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Ed Ogeron, head coach.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
With that two-toned bat, windmills it around, now ready to hit. Here's a 2-1. And that's driven deep to left center field. Garner is going back.
Off the bat of Altuve, out of the mouth of Ford and Sparks, it was an awesome moment. Inside the juice box, late Saturday night, the call on TV, pretty darn good as well. Even Clint would have to admit that. Welcome back in. You absolutely smash Joe Buck. Not only when given an opportunity, you go out of your way to smash
yes.
Joe Buck, but you like that call on Saturday night.
I got to give credit where credit is due. Sometimes, especially on TV, whenever it's radio, obviously, you got to bring the heat on it. But in a moment like that on television, when you have a walk-off home run, he let the moment speak for itself. I feel like sometimes there's announcers don't let that happen. Joe Buck, this was his crowning moment.
And I'm glad, I don't know about his crowning moment, but I'm glad that you said that. And it relates to the radio call. Let me tell you how and why. I promise you that they had to basically lower the deafening level, the roar inside Minute Maid, for that call that we just played back. I actually got to hear it live on our station. Dude, it was louder than that. That place was coming unhinged. And so, yes, to allow the majesty that was Minute Maid Park coming unglued and just roaring. Yeah, it was a good call on TV by Joe Buck. I caught that one after the fact. I actually listened to it
nice as
it was happening. So the Stros, second time in 3 years to the World Series. This time they're going to be hosting, and this time, maybe a little bit unlike the ALCS, they had their ducks absolutely in a row on the mound. Announced earlier today by A.J. Hinch, it'll be Garrett Cole tomorrow night starting game one opposite of Max Scherzer. Could easily be a Cy Young matchup there between the two. Justin Verlander versus Steven Strasburg Wednesday night. Again, that's from Minute Maid. The two teams will travel Thursday and begin a three-game set Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the nation's capital. Zach Greinke will go Friday night, TBD, for the National League pennant winners. So this one's set up, Clint, for Cole and Verlander to throw twice apiece. And if you have a break-the-glass Game 7, do not discount the idea that Cole might just be there waiting for that one as well.
Exactly. Whenever you're this kind of situation, you need to be ready to go. And I think Garrett Cole knows that if you get to Game 7, I'm going to steal a phrase from the water boy, last game of the year, can't hold anything back. You've got to want to throw out your guy, be it for one or two innings.
You've got kind of a Dan Fouts beard right there. So
yes, I do.
Appropriate that you might go to a cut from the water boy. We're going to talk some more Strohs as we wind down our 4 o'clock hour. We'd love to hear from you. I especially want to hear from anybody who's going these next couple of days to watch the Strohs try to take it back. Hit us up. Let us know your plans. I'll at least try to get a contact high from your attendance in the next few nights. 706-0111. And a PSA for everyone throughout Acadiana. We're going to be airing the ball games. So do not forget, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's the same drill. 6 p.m. Astro launch takes off from Minute Maid Park. 7:08 is going to be the first pitch. And so I'll lead you into it the next two nights. 6 o'clock, you get an hour and 8 minutes of Astro launch, and then you'll have first pitch again from the juice box. Cole Scherzer tomorrow night's got a chance to be a movie, brother. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. Runs, you would imagine, will be at a premium. Who can strike first and drive the other starter out of the ballgame first should be the order of the night.
Exactly. That's going to be the key to game number one. Both these guys are absolute studs. We've seen Scherzer, especially in the postseason, he has been absolutely feasting. I mean, you look at Cole, that is undoubtedly the hottest hand in all of baseball. We've brought it up before. The guy hasn't lost in like 5 months. It's amazing what we've seen from him, not just in the postseason, but the regular season as well. I can't wait till game number one.
I tell you and our listeners all the time on the show, I'm a man who knows how to use my time wisely. I'm also a man who keeps very questionable company. I say that to say this. Yesterday, at the Twin Peaks watch party, me, you, and Blaine Viator, yeah, that's the questionable company part.
Yeah.
We discussed this World Series, and one of our talking points I want to bring to the air because it's a good one. Do you scrap Yordan Alvarez in the World Series? Ultimately, I think the answer is no, but he's been so dreadful in these playoffs, especially in the ALCS, that you at least have to think about it for your games at home, right? When you're messing with the DH, you at least have to think about it. Ultimately, I want that boomstick in the lineup. If it reignites in time for a couple of big blasts in the final 4 to 7 games of your season, I think you have to take that chance. But I'm not sporting him in the top 5, maybe in the top 6 spots in this lineup. I think it's time that Yordan gets buried a little closer to 7. See if you can come up with a little, end of the order magic.
You need to wind up trying to figure out what you're going to do with him. Because, again, I mean, he is a rookie. We understand that. Being the postseason in his rookie season, not necessarily where maybe some of us expect him to be at this point in time. You need a little more seasoning because you can about imagine this is a big...
Well, you're not giving him seasoning for the future. You need him right bleeping now.
Yeah.
But I think at one point, last time I looked up, he was 1-for-23.
With like 12 strikeouts.
Yo. And this is a guy, if you recall, at about the 115-120 game mark of the regular season. Yeah. I remember there was a streak where this cat had 15 straight ABs where he didn't swing and miss at a pitch. And now he's striking out once every other at-bat in the ALCS. So is the moment too big for him? I kind of doubt that. As much success as he's had this early, I think he's ready for prime time. Air Yordan is going to be a cornerstone of this franchise at the dish for years to come. But how long can you wait to pull that cog in the machine? I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is I'd err on the side of, you know what, just play this thing out. And if you don't end up pulling him and it costs you, that's fine. But if he gives you 2 blasts and 5 or 6 RBIs in this World Series, wouldn't that be critical? Especially when you're looking down the barrel of maybe 4 to 5 total starts between Scherzer and Strasburg.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest thing you're going to have to deal with is the fact you brought it up perfectly. You're playing two like really solid pitchers over in the NL, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see Air Yordan take off maybe more in game two than game one, because you just look at who Jordan faced off against in the ALCS, your James Paxtons, your Masahiro Tanakas, your CC Sabathias. The guy was just dealing with a lot of studs.
And we saw Yuli kind of wake up from a little mini slump in the ALCS as well when it mattered. We saw Michael Brantley deliver the defensive play of his lifetime.
That was like one of the best things I've ever
Holy smokes, that was incredible. And I'll tell you right now, a guy who's just a magnet. I know that Tuve deservedly won the ALCS MVP. Yep. Deservedly. I think there's a chance that George Springer is one of the most clutch postseason athletes of our lifetime.
Yeah.
The guy's just a magnet toward huge play in the postseason.
Exactly. I have to agree with you. I mean, he was probably, I'd say, about like 2 or 3 feet away from robbing that thing. And almost he would have to pull a Major League Two, basically. He would have to climb up on the right field wall to be able to get that one.
I thought you were going to give me the euchre where he said, no. That's not Shaquille O'Neal in left field. That baby is gone. Never gets old going to the euchre well. In fact, might have to trot that out. I've got Karen Crow at Abbeville this Friday night. When in doubt, I might just go euchre a little bit to pass some of my time down there in Vermilion Parish. All right, we've got no time left in the 4 o'clock hour. Wait, scratch that. Clint says we have enough time for one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Heartfelt. And, yeah, I want to send some heartfelt thoughts, prayers, and some best wishes out to former Georgia and Miami football head coach Mark Richt. These days he's an analyst for the ACC Network. Richt came out on Twitter earlier today and said, I know that word travels fast, so I want everybody to hear it from me that can. Yes, I did have a heart attack, but I'm going to be okay, and I plan to get back to work this week. Yo, I think everybody listening has watched that man coach an awful lot of football games. So, yeah, I know. I went to Georgia while he was coaching there, but I'm also a decent human being. My gut tells me that you are as well. So join me, if you don't mind. Let's send some heartfelt thoughts and wishes, prayers out to the Mark Richt family. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're going to keep it going. Beloved LSU football players and where Burrow ranks, plus an interview with Ruffin Rodri, fairly beloved himself. All that coming up next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is KLWB.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
LSU wins, the Saints win, and the Falcons lose. With that, we are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. All of us having fun on a Monday. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. I'll get right back in to LSU football, but Clint, how about a postscript to the final word, if such a thing exists? We just told you that Mark Richt, former Georgia, Miami football head coach, announced earlier today on Twitter that he had a heart attack, but he'd be back and would resume work as an analyst for the ACC Network this week. He has since responded on Twitter, Clint. His, I guess, humor faculties are still all intact. I guess I'm off the cheese balls, your latest tweet from Mark Richt.
That is absolutely fantastic right there.
Stay off the cheese balls, brother, and stay healthy. Hey, speaking of health, bit of a bummer. Haven't talked about this yet, but I do want to get you the news. Zion Williamson has had surgery to repair, what is it, CD, a torn meniscus?
Yeah, torn meniscus.
Out 6 to 8 weeks, the original prognosis. Pels open up this highly anticipated 2019-2020 season tomorrow night. They're actually the first game of the NBA calendar regular season. They're north of the border, taking on the defending champion, Toronto Raptors. So Zion will not play a part in that one, will not play, reportedly, for the next 6 to 8 weeks. But I let off telling you that LSU won, and that's due in no small part to the continued Herculean effort of one Joe Burrow. And Burbank Joe, at this point, has to be considered a Heisman frontrunner, and that's all due respect. And I'm talking about Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby style. I did say, with all due respect to Jalen Hurts and what he's doing at Oklahoma, I mean, just video game activity over there. He does it with his arm and legs. What we're seeing right now from Tua Tagovailoa, of course, that's kind of come to a head. He had ankle surgery himself to repair a high ankle sprain. Some doubt cast over whether or not he'll play against LSU in a couple of Saturdays. 2:30 kickoff from T-Town. Joe Burrow right now is redefining the way people, I mean, just conceive LSU football. It's incredible what he's doing. And it caused me to ask a question early in the 4 o'clock hour. Who is the most beloved player in LSU football history? Clint chimed in and said it's Kevin Faulk. That one's tough to argue. For the sake of discussion, I offered up the Honey Badger. We've had calls in that have said Jacob Hester. Dr. Tommy Casanova. We've had some really good responses so far. We gave you some of the scuttlebutt from Facebook, but Clint, let's give some love to our tweeps. What's Twitter say to this one?
Our Twitter people are all over the place with this one, and we're going to kind of break the rule here because the first response is somebody that we all knew too well, that is Blaine Viator, and you kind of guess where he's going with this one.
The guy that literally comes and used to watch LSU games at his house before he was coaching at LSU?
Yes, Kevin Faulk.
Yeah, okay, that was a real hard leap there. Give me some more.
And then Jonathan F. going with Devin White, a more recent pick. I'm okay with that.
Devin White belongs way up there in the Pantheon.
And then Don M. throwing out Billy Cannon. I think we all have to agree on that one.
The only Heisman Trophy winner, Dr. Billy Cannon. Give me more.
Madison L. going with the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah. Nobody's ever had that type of persona and lived up to it while on LSU's campus.
And the last one, Paul B., going with Kevin Faulk or Billy Cannon, kind of doing a double dip there, Costanza style.
That's not bad. That's not bad. We want to take some more over the air. We had a good roll of calls going. Matt, Phil, Tony, all dialed us up. You can do the same right now. But hit us quickly. We've got Ruff and Roderick, again, beloved in his own way, in about 10 minutes. Between now and then, let's hear from you. 706-01-11. I offered up at least two more and no real substantiation from our listening audience or anybody on social media yet. I gave Charles Alexander. I also gave Glenn Dorsey. And what's interesting to me is when next generation players want to wear the uni of a guy that played before them. We're watching it happen with 7, with 18. Speaking of that, nobody's given me Matt Mauk or Matt Flynn yet. Just kind of floating that out there. But there's a reason, right, that an Acadiana area player in Tyler Shelvin is wearing 72 right now. And it's the comparisons to Putt, Glenn Dorsey, the most decorated defensive player in the program's history, with all due respect to a 3-time All-American in Dr. Tommy Casanova. But everything Glenn Dorsey was able to pull off in his time in Baton Rouge, awfully impressive. Just imagine if he hadn't been chop-blocked by Auburn. Another story for another day. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Mike, thank you for your patience. Who you got for me?
Favorite LSU Tiger. Man, there's so many good ones, but Dalton Hilliard, loved his heart.
That's a really good one. And earlier, Mike, we appreciate the call. Earlier, somebody offered up Devery Henderson, admitted that he was from Opelousas, and I said, you know what? Devery resonates because he won a championship at LSU and then helped the Saints to do it. And Mike gives us Dalton Hilliard, who, again, got to do that double dip, got to play for LSU, got to play for the Saints, back in the gap when LSU drafted, or Saints drafted LSU players. I know, Will Clapp from Brother Martin was drafted. And Clapp is actually starting to feature occasionally, if you haven't noticed, on 6 O-lineman sets, had a really good block on one of the Latavius Murray touchdown runs yesterday. But not bad at all. Dalton Hilliard. Some LSU backs that certainly deserve to be in the discussion. Darius Geis, Leonard Fournette. I gave Jerry Stovall earlier a run-up for the Heisman. Dr. Billy Cannon certainly won the Heisman. Jacob Hester's been submitted, but I think at that position, everybody's probably in line behind Feezy K. And we'll give a lot of respect on this program to Kevin Falk. Clint, you and I were thinking about it earlier. I don't know that we've settled on a final answer yet. How many times do you think we've had Kevin on this program? It's been a while since he's been busy on the other side of the basin. I would bet Kevin's been on this program six, seven times.
I'd probably just go double digits because I like
you think
to,
so?
I'd go nice round number because I know we've had him on a number of times over the phone, closer to Super Bowl season, and mind you, since we've done the show, the Patriots have made the Super Bowl quite a few times.
Yeah, well, we could probably have that opportunity again in about 3 months, basically Groundhog Day style if we wait on it.
Exactly, and then, of course, we've had him on a couple times when you had those Karen Crow pep rallies.
That's the one time that he came on for about, I think we counted after, about 17 or 18 minutes uninterrupted from right outside of Swanky's downtown was magic radio, and I had very little to do with it. He was in his element. He was having fun. He was watching his hometown be feted, the kids that he was coaching be celebrated as Karen Crow was in the midst of a little playoff run there. That was my favorite Kevin Falk interview that's appeared on radio. There you go. We've had some off the air that have been fun as well. But we got time for your submissions. Most beloved player in LSU football history, 706-0111. And the inspiration, again, I'll be transparent, it's what Joe Burrow is doing. And a year after what Devin White did, those are two guys in the modern era that have a chance to transcend generations, especially Burrow, depending on how this year ends up. Especially if he can lead LSU into Tuscaloosa and win that game, exercise those demons, they may build a statue for the man. And I don't give a damn if Tua plays or he doesn't. This win has been a long time coming. LSU's got one to take care of in between now and then with Auburn coming to town. But everybody's starting to cast an eye toward that game at Bryant-Denny Stadium. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith is with us. Keith, who you got? No pulse, just the dial tone.
His submission was a Bird Jones. I guess he just wanted to get his take in and get out. Should have told me that he didn't want to be on the air.
We talk about numbers that are passed on, and that's probably, I would think, the first and most famous number seven. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, Billy Cannon was wearing a sporting a double-digit number there. But number seven for Burt Jones has turned into, well, the baddest motor scooter on the team. Number 18, all right, that one started in more recent times. There's no question about that. But seven's been worn by some very, very good players. All right, as we hit our first break in our second hour, a quick nod to LSU basketball. Will Wade's Tigers preseason ranked number 22 in the AP poll. That came out earlier today. Number one in the preseason, Tom Izzo and the Spartans of Michigan State, team that knocked LSU out in the Sweet 16 a year ago. And so Trey Waters, Naz Reid out, and LSU still a top 25 team. Again, the AP poll has the Bayou Bengals at number 22. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we return, Ruffin Rodriguez joins the fray. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, this is RP3.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. Cajuns, Tiger Saints, all winners this past week. They've been doing that, all three of them, most of this season, and that makes our next guest a very happy man. Ruffin Rodriguez, owner of Rufino's on the River, right back with us. How are you, Ruff?
Oh, man. Life's pretty good in South Louisiana, you know, these days. I tell you, it's a lot of fun to be a Cajun Tiger and Saints fan.
I understand, Ruffin, that Mississippi State brought a true freshman out there, that he's probably a better athlete than a quarterback, but I just don't care. When I watch LSU's defense come to the party like that and join the high-powered offense, that's what starts to bolster my confidence.
Yeah, you know, it's been a kind of a roller coaster for the defense, starting off unbelievable against Georgia Southern, and then, you know, going to Texas and giving up, you know, 2 LSU halves against Texas, great first half. Second half was tough, you know, with the yardage, and then you and you play against a team from the West Coast that's averaging 550, and you limit them to 150, and then Florida comes in and you know they put up a pretty good number with a quarterback that played lights out, and you know it's but they've gotten better. The thing is they're not missing those dumb tackles anymore, and a lot of kids out of place here and there, but. It's hard for a team that high powered offensively to have a great defense. Now you see it in some conferences where they're like the Big Ten, which is a terrible conference. So Ohio State's going to do that to everybody. But in the SEC, man, you better bring your A game every week, and that's what they're doing. And it's hey, look, let's take it in right now. Everything's really really working well right now. It's fun to watch.
You've got a better understanding of the history of LSU's program than I do, Ruffin. What type of place is Burrow carving out in this program's history?
I don't know if it's just program history. I'm thinking NCAA history. I mean, how many SEC quarterbacks have ever done what he's doing? He and Tua. Oh, man. I don't know if we'll ever see two guys like this again in the same conference. It's just special, man. I was lucky to have my roommate and teammate be Tommy Hodson for 4 years, just tear up the SEC. And that was we were a run-based team. You know, and then came along Steve Spurrier in Florida and the fun gun offense, and that's when really people started really throwing the ball. But Tommy Hodson was really the first prolific passer in SEC history. He was the big boy. So it was a lot of fun then. But now, man, with these schemes and these receivers, 6'4", can run – 4.4 40s and catch everything. They wear these gloves now. You know, when I played, weren't allowed to wear those gloves. You couldn't have stick them. So it was, drop balls were a lot more prevalent back then. But now you basically have fly paper in your hands. They shouldn't miss anything. And they're just tearing it up, man. You know, slants are basically uncoverable. You know, if you're going to defend LSU or Alabama, these coaches really are taking advantage of. They're making it almost too simple for these quarterbacks to read and throw. And a guy, when you got a guy as smart as Joe Burrow, man, he is just he's on spot, on target with everything. Now he gets back his number one red zone receiver in Marshall. Man, I mean, and then discovered another weapon with Randy Moss's son Thaddeus this weekend. What he did, and then. Racing McMath, and he's just the list goes on of his talent and targets to throw to.
It's a great point about the tight end Thaddeus Moss. Our guest Ruffin Rodriguez on 103.7 The Game. In the media, we can jump ahead a little bit, so indulge me a little bit. Your thoughts on that game in Tuscaloosa? It's definitively now going to be at 2:30, and the possibility, kind of like last year, exists that Tua might not play. How do you respond to it?
I mean, you're going to hear a lot of those things. I'm take him with a grain of salt. I told my son, "You want to play against the best. I want to play. We want to play against Tua. We want to play Alabama's best. The last thing you want is Alabama fans to have that same old excuse. You know, somebody was hurt. Somebody that when they get beat, there's always an excuse in the eyes of the Crimson Tide. But we want to play their best. So I hope he does play And I hope it's a night game. I know the 2:30 game is big, but there's something about being on prime time, especially at night for Tiger fans. But we'll take it as they get. But first of all, you know, they're big rivals with Auburn this weekend. And Auburn's a pretty good football team, and we need to be, you know, 100% in all areas and mentally to beat this team. Auburn's that good.
I know there's an opportunity for our listeners to get involved quickly with their holiday parties at Ruffino's on the River. They can go to RuffinosLafayette.com. But what else is going on right now?
Yeah, just the holiday parties, a lot of fun, a lot of homecomings, dances. My buddy from Eunice sent his daughter and a big crew this weekend to the restaurant and just had a ball. It was a beautiful weekend. A lot of fun stuff going on. Got some good marketing stuff going, and the gift cards really are going to be a big deal next month with the 50 on 100 deal, which is always a great deal for everybody. Businesses that want to save up and have a little extra for their employees. You buy a thousand, you get $500 free. So that, and there's a lot of specials. Desserts have been off the chain. I had a meal there last week with a business group. We did a private luncheon, and I still can't forget. It was a basic fresh redfish with stuff with crab meat dressing, and I told my managers I don't think I've ever had anything that good in my life. I would put it up against any restaurant in the world, that dish I had last week. And there's just special culinary kids over there, man, in Lafayette that really make Rufino's in the River that special.
I love it. All right, we got to take it to the Saints next. It's understood that when Drew Brees is healthy, he'll be the starting quarterback. How would you treat this whole thing with Alvin Kamara, though? A high ankle sprain, you've got a game against Arizona this week, and then it's a bye week. How long and how much leash would you give Kamara?
Well, the high ankle sprain is like some people think it's almost as good to have a meniscus tear like Zion has, to where you can actually repair it and heal it and it comes back 100%. But for some reason, a high ankle sprain is one of those things, if you don't let it heal all the way, man, it will linger and linger and linger and linger. You know, so that with Leonard Fournette for a year, and it's a hard deal, and especially as big as strong as these guys are, as fast as they run, it's a lot of pressure to be put on that sprain, on that ligament, on that tendon. So it's one of those deals, man. You just gotta he's got to rest, and you got a guy that you drafted for letting Mark Ingram go, and he proved himself last week. It's a good thing about the Saints, man. Is that next man up, basically, is what they have, their mentality right now. And that's the culture of the Saints, which is probably the best culture in the NFL, with the Patriots, is as far as winning and attitude. You know, one guy goes down, hey, next man up. And that's their attitude, and that's why they're winning.
How would you summarize Sean Payton's time in New Orleans and what he's meant to football, not just for that franchise, but in this state?
Well, I haven't had anybody snicker when I've said the last 3 years that, and I truly believe, and I said this to Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler the other night at the restaurant in Baton Rouge. I said, Sean Payton, in my opinion, is the greatest offensive mind of all time in football history, not just NFL or college. For to put up the numbers that he had with the talent he was given over the years is truly remarkable. I mean, I've never seen an offense like that one that where receivers are that open that often all the time. And give it to Brees and all that, but, man, I'm telling you, he, scheme-wise, is as good as anybody in history. And he's meant that much. He brought a city back that was pretty much cold-cocked and knocked out by a man-made flood after a storm. And they resurrected. Reggie Bush and Drew Brees, and he resurrected a city, man. They made us proud to be Louisianans again in that realm. And he's done more for any NFL or professional city than any coach I've ever seen in any sport.
Incredibly well said. Ruffin, each and every Monday, I enjoy these visits. Our listeners do as well. Thank you, brother.
I appreciate it, my man. Have a good one.
That's Ruffin Rodri, owner of Rufino's on the River, and owner of a pretty strong opinion there. I don't know that anybody's going to shout him down, though, right? Most prolific, best offensive mind of all time. And we'd all be able to point to the guys in college, right? And in the modern era, it's been, what, Spurrier? You could argue those Chip Kelly Oregon offenses. It pains me to say this, but a lot of the Urban Meyer offenses, those guys are pretty darn good at what they do offensively. Probably a few more than I'm neglecting on the collegiate side. On the professional side, you know, it's interesting. Brady and the Pats have had some of the league's best offenses, no question, since TB12 took over. But I don't think any of us look at Belichick that way. He's a defensive guy, right? And so when you consider the NFL, there's what? Air Coryell and those really old-school Chargers offenses with Dan Fouts at the helm. Could probably point to a few more, right? The 80s Dolphins, those offenses, Don Shula. But if you just went sheer offensive minds, it's going to be hard, I think, to catch up with somebody like Sean Payton. So it's a bold claim from Ruffin, but I think it's one that's certainly with merit. No question in my mind. All right, we're halfway done with hour number two. On the other side, I want to dive in to a Bo Nix quote that adds fuel to a fire that didn't need it. Also, the Hat is back in Kansas. His Jayhawks just about beat the Texas Longhorns. They didn't, but he still gave us some memorable sound. And he spun some yarn after the game was over in Lawrence. Thank you, Les, for, you know, just being Les. All that and more after a quick timeout. We'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
MetLife Stadium, New York, a 10-point underdog against the undefeated Pats. Elsewhere, the Texans have acquired cornerback Gerrion Conley in a trade with the Raiders, and the Carolina Panthers have announced that...
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
I want to tell a pretty sweet betting tale before we dive into the shade today. So our friends at Patio Center know that you're on deck, and quickly you'll help us hit a home run. But this is just too good. And even Cousin Dino, I think, would blush at this one, Clint. Shout out to @TigerFunk69. That's a nice handle on the Twitter machine. @TigerFunk69 has been telling this fun story that's playing out with Brody Miller of The Athletic and a bunch of other LSU-based reporters, in which @TigerFunk69 keeps snapshotting week by week what his bet looks like online for Joe Burrow to win the Heisman. This is pretty funny because you could see that @TigerFunk69 placed this bet on June 7th. That's from way downtown, Clint.
Yeah, this is like right as like the Heisman odds like came out.
June 7th at 13:53 Eastern Daylight Time, all right? So this cat's out there balling at
1:53
Eastern, brother.
Oh, Eastern Time.
Yeah, okay. Correct yourself. Don't wreck yourself. 1253 corrected to our time. This guy threw down a lunch, probably on his a bet on his lunch break. $50 to win, wait for it, $10,000 that Joe Burrow wins the Heisman. He found 200-1 odds that Burbank Joe would win the Heisman. 200-1. And I believe it's BetUS, but he keeps getting sent a cash out now valuation. In other words, BetUS is C-wrapping their pants that this guy's about to take him for 10 large after putting up $50. Any idea what they're offering him right now just to buy this thing out and them not completely lose face?
$4,000 right
now. You've seen this on the
Twitter. Oh, trust me, yes. Okay. I've answered the question.
You spend way too much time on social media. I asked the wrong person if I was trying to really get anything out of that. Now, for what it's worth, after the Georgia Southern opener @TigerFunk69 says that they tried to start buying him out of the bet at $1,300. So after the season opener, oh, we're in a lot of trouble here, is what they realized. 13 hundo they put up. It was 1,800 a couple of weeks ago. After the win over Mississippi State Saturday, they are now offering him $4,000. And so Brody Miller, of course, doing his journalistic duty, posted this and then said, "What would you do?" The first response is from Joe Burrow's dad on Twitter, who's fantastic on Twitter, and he said, "Let it ride." That's pretty awesome, dude.
Yes, exactly.
The guy put up 50 bones to win 10,000. They're trying to give him 4,000 to just basically shut up, go away, and sweep it under the rug. Uh-uh, not happening. Wouldn't be prudent. That's pretty funny stuff. This is pretty interesting as well. Before I get to the Les Miles and the Bo Nix, a pairing of characters if ever there were one, let me remind you, it's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and, of course, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. You can also trust management top down, starting with Mark, to sit down with you, create a vision, and then fulfill it. And I promise they're going to exceed your expectations. They're ready to up your patio game at Patio Center. But make sure you go to the website to start. PatioCenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at PatioCenter.com.
It is a crime against humanity that we don't have actual sound on this, but let me give some credit here to Brian Davis of the Austin Statesman. He was covering the Texas KU game up in Rock Chalk Jayhawk land on Saturday. My guy Danny Jones was up there as well. I thought Texas was supposed to be four touchdowns better than Kansas. Okay, that's shade within the shade there, but Danny knows I'm having fun. Here is what Les Miles said after that close call. Texas nipped Kansas basically at the gun, and afterward the hat said, I can only just picture him saying this, quote, "You think that people that leave the stadium will know Kansas? I think they will know that phrase, Kansas. It seems a little bit more now to me, Kansas," end quote. And I didn't have to be there to know that Brian Davis transcribed that exactly as the man said it. He referred to the name of his university, also the name of his state, which now that he lives there, I wonder if it's our Kansas. The pre-shade and the inner shade there continues. "I think they will know that phrase, Kansas." The man is turning the name of the state and the university into a phrase. And then he finishes it with, "It seems a little bit more now to me." It'll never cease to amaze me, Clint. The way that the man phrases his thoughts and sentences, Les Miles is absolutely hilarious. And Kansas is more than just a state. For that matter, it's more than just a state of being. It is a phrase. It's more than just a band as well. But we'll carry on, my wayward son. And let me bring you now to Bo Nix. And I don't know that this was a good idea. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and say it's a bad idea. Earlier today, Nix, at an Auburn press conference, according to Bleacher Report, said, and they quote, "I played in the biggest game of opening week in front of 100,000 people, so I don't think this stage at Death Valley is really anything special," end quote. Take some stones for the true freshman there. And I understand that his pops played at Tiger Stadium. Bring back the Magic game. Jerry DiNardo and LSU beating Auburn in a low-scoring worm burner in 96, if memory serves right. But here is Bo Nix. "Hey, I played Oregon in Jerry World, so certainly going to Death Valley is not going to be anything that special. Don't know that you needed to give anybody in the purple and gold any extra motivation, but I do believe you just did."
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
From Les Miles to Bo Nix, just like we drew it up all weekend long. You knew that would be the pairing, and so did we. Might as well reserve a table for him at Throwing Shade. Bo Nix with some motivation that probably wasn't required. And then Les Miles just doing him some less things. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Max is with us, and Max wants to talk a little Bo Nix and LSU. Hit us.
You know, when you bring up LSU, I'm always going to call in. So Bo Nix thinks playing in Arlington in front of Oregon fans is comparative to playing in Death Valley with 102 screaming drunk Cajuns. I don't know about that.
I don't know that that's going to work out. Hey, I'll tell you this, Max. I'm not sure that's going to work out for him either. I've covered a lot of games in Jerry World. I won't tell you that it doesn't get loud. I will tell you that most people there end up watching the game on the Jumbotron. So how really involved are they?
Right. I watched the LSU-TCU game there. And, I mean, we were in there, and I don't remember it being that loud. And that was a one-score game for almost the entire game. So Jerry World acoustics aren't the same as Death Valley, but all you got to do is go back to Florida Week and watch Tim Tebow on whatever program he was on talking about how Death Valley is just different. So I asked for it for Florida week. I didn't get it. Hopefully we'll get next this week.
There it is. Bring it back. Max demands it. He wants the band to play Neck. He's not alone. I don't think I would take that bet. Not even like the at Tiger Funk 69 bet. I don't know that I would even take 200-1 odds on the band playing Neck. I'll go out on a limb and say that would be the biggest accomplishment of the early Scott Woodward era if the band plays Neck.
Exactly. Especially in that Auburn game. That being said, this is something that we've talked about off air, me and a bunch of other people here, is the possibility of the band playing Neck if they're up against Alabama late in the fourth quarter.
This is what you people talk about.
Yes.
When I'm not around in the 237 Roof Studios.
Yes. We got a lot of problems.
I'm glad I plug out every day and go back to my life. All right, I got to hit a break here. Maybe teach Glenn a thing or two. Then we'll be right back in, finish up our second hour. James Buers coming aboard at straight up 6 o'clock. We'll review LCA's win over Notre Dame. We'll talk STM over Terlings and what in the world's going on in Class 3A with our local programs. James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate will tell you in less than 20 minutes. So after a brief timeout, you know we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Parch the Third here, host of RP3 Inc.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 1037 The Game.
As always, there are good beats and bad beats, I think, even dead beats when it comes to attempts at gambling. That 50 to win 10,000 on Joe Burrow's Heisman odds from June is just gold. I'll give you another bad beat, Clint. These things happen all the time. Basically, anyone who went head up with Aaron Rodgers in fantasy football this week, and my hand is touching the sky here inside the 237 Roof Studios, Cat put up 62 on me in my money league. And it's a league where points are inflated a little bit. I call it the super flex league.
Yeah.
62.
Jesus, that's a lot.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, yes. All of them. It was a lot, and it will not be surmountable. Can I make that word up? Okay, it is insurmountable.
Yes.
That much is for certain, right? And I'll tell you this. While we spin it forward a little bit, week 7 of the NFL season, people right now are either still invested in fantasy, super psyched about fantasy, or just completely done with it. More than in years past, I'm somewhere between still sort of invested and completely done with it. That ought to let you know just about where I'm at right now. So anybody out there that's feeling like I am, feel free to call. We'll be a shoulder for you. 706-0111. How's it going for you and the Under the Dome League, CD?
Not exactly great, Ben. And, you know, it kind of all has to do with the fact that my bold strategy basically fell out from underneath me after week 2. And that was the Drew Brees, Jared Cook, Alvin Kamara kind of triad. And that
can never go all in on one team. It's always, even if you had the Chiefs last year,
yeah,
at a certain point, it went kaput on you.
And it failed miserably, Ben. I'm just sitting here like, okay, this is not what I wanted.
There's something else I've noticed that's happening this year in fantasy football that feels like an isolated incident of a season. I just don't remember it happening like this as regularly. We've discussed on the show how the Eagles put up like a 36 burger with their defense,
yeah,
a few weeks ago. The Patriots have hit at least 25, I think, twice so far in this season. And then there was yesterday, and there was another one of those defensive juggernaut performances. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they returned a pick six late in the game, multiple forced fumbles and sacks, the interception that led to the score, 20-plus performers as well. Wow. These defenses are scoring more than elite running backs and receivers in leagues suddenly. That can't happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's very weird, and it really kind of changes the way you think about things. And I'm sure it's just an anomaly of this year more than any other, but there's a possibility this can become more of a trend now that we're seeing more and more of these high-caliber athletes on the defensive side of the football, and a lot of them probably are all coming from the Southeastern Conference. I think that's definitely causing it to be a lot bigger of a deal for defenses to be absolute weapons.
It just means more
defense
to fantasy defense. Yeah, I get you. I would offer this up as well. You're a huge South Park fan. I know this about you.
Yep.
I would imagine a number of YP, you people out there in listener land, same thing. I am as well. They're getting topical again this season, if you haven't noticed.
Of course.
Absolutely crushing LeBron James' face for everything with China right now. So if I were to reach out to Matt and Trey, I need them to tackle one of the other biggest societal issues we're having involving sports.
Okay.
The rise of fantasy defenses. If you could just crush that a little bit on the show, maybe it'll come back to the norm somewhat. And maybe, just maybe, we'll all be forced to start playing IDP instead of these defenses that are randomly going off for 25 or 30 points and spoiling what would otherwise be a fun fantasy party. I will tell you this, spinning it from fantasy football into reality football, as predicted, CD, the 49ers are 6-0. And the Bills are 5-1, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And
I don't know if any of them are really all that good. I think there's a chance that the Niners are good. I think the Bills are just kind of hanging around. They'll play the rest of their division enough. Just wait for that.
Yeah,
especially the the Bills. They'll get the Pats at least once more. But I told you there were two teams that would be way better than ever expected, just based off the fact that they were playing the Dolphins and the Redskins, respectively, this weekend.
Yeah.
And we also took a look around some teams that if they didn't win this week, they'd be in some trouble. Let's review that while we have a little bit of time left at the end of our 5 o'clock hour. The Rams avoided the trouble, right? They got their win at Atlanta. They played Atlanta. Of course they got a win. So the Rams, yes, they're going to be fine at least for now. The Chiefs, they got that dub. But they lost Pat Mahomes for a little while.
Yeah, that's going to be rough for the Kansas City Chiefs, losing him for several weeks, probably well into December. That's going to wind up putting them kind of a fringe wild card team right now.
The Lions, with the loss at home to the Vikings, fell to 2-3-1, so they started to slide down the slippery slope. The Chargers, even though they think they won that game a few times, lost yesterday at Tennessee, somehow, some way, they are now 2-5. The Bears are now 3-3. And the Eagles, getting crushed last night, are now 3-4. But there's one other team that I want to throw their name into the mix. And they belong on the side that they improved to be better than maybe any of us thought that they could be. Don't think I didn't notice, and help me out with the double negative there, that the Colts beat the Texans yesterday. The Texans will be fine. They're 4-3. They've got one of the best quarterbacks in football. I don't think anybody expected, after Andrew Luck retired, on the cusp of the regular season, that Jacoby Brissett and the Colts doing things the Frank Reich way, baby, would be 4-2. But they are. And T.Y. Hilton is playing like one of the best receivers in football again. And Marlon Mack is starting to play inspired at the running back position again. The Colts are 4-2. And so as we kind of look at the teams like the Niners, like the Bills, that are better than expected, you better throw Indy's name and that horseshoe in there.
I feel like a broken record, Ben. It just continues to be emphasized to me. You're the backup quarterback, and Jacoby Brissett, yes, he was the starting quarterback week one.
He was the original backup quarterback this year.
He was the OG backup QB, and I absolutely love it.
That might be the best turn of phrase you've ever had. In almost
4.75 years
of doing this show. I'll let you try to say it again. He's the what again?
The OG backup QB.
Wow. I might actually make shirts out of that.
Yes, and I need a cut of the revenue there.
Teddy Bridgewater certainly isn't the OG, but he's starting to prove to be AG of the backup QB. We need to put that on a shirt. We need to print them and then retire from doing this here radio show. That might be all that's needed. Hey, speaking of South Park, I'm going to take you to a little basketball there. First we get the khakis, then we get the jobs,
yes.
Then we get the girls.
Yes, we do.
So just rinse, wash, repeat. But instead of with, the girls and the khakis and the job, it's different. We're just going to do it with the shirts and then the money and no more bumper-to-bumper sports. All right, that's a pipe dream. The reality is there will be another half hour of B2BS. We start off the 6 o'clock hour with James Buers talking high school football. And I got to wax poetic on the start of the NBA season. It tips off tomorrow night. We now know Zion Williamson won't be participating, but there's a lot of intrigue there and a ton of turnover in the association. So stick around. We got more Bumper to Bumper Sports bouncing right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studio.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll? It's our third and final hour. Welcome back in. More Bumper to Bumper Sports bringing you home on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. It's Monday. It's 6 o'clock. You know that means we're going to be joined aboard the ARCO Equipment Hotline by James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. James, another great week of high school football. How goes it today?
It goes pretty well, Ben. How are you doing, man?
Life is good here. I want to start with a game that was played last Thursday night. Haven't gotten your reaction yet to LCA over Notre Dame. Tell me what it means and what the likelihood is we see the Pios and Knights again in the postseason.
Well, it's obviously a huge win for LCA, just, you know, kind of, you know, staking their claim as the best team in not only Division III, but probably in all of Class 2A as well, both select and non-select. And, you know, they challenged themselves all year playing the likes of Westgate, Acadiana, and Evangel, but you felt like playing the defending champions in the bracket that they will be playing in the playoffs, you know, that would be the best indicator of where LCA is and if they have a chance of competing for a state championship. And, you know, they won the game 17-14, but, you know, at times it wasn't pretty for them offensively. They struggled with turnovers early. They at one point fumbled on the goal line in the third quarter, and you really thought, man, it might be a tough night for them scoring at all. But they got a pick six right after that fumble on the goal line. And then when Notre Dame took the lead on a long drive that they typically do, where they chew off, you know, 7 minutes off the clock or something like that, Errol Rogers came up with the biggest play in the game, retreating to his own goal line to evade a pass rush, and then heaving a ball to Ethan Lang, who happened to be wide open, and he turned upfield and scored for an 81-yard touchdown. And that not only tied the game, but kind of, I think, knocked Notre Dame on their heels at that point, because their next series, they went 3-and-out, and then LCA put together the game-winning drive and kicked the game-winning field goal. So just a tremendous victory for LCA and sets them up really nicely to be the number one seed in the playoffs. I think their strength of schedule is good enough on top of them having probably 9 wins for them to be the number one seed. So really good all around for LCA. And as long as their offense can do enough, I think their defense is plenty good. And, of course, they have one of the best return specialists in the state. And obviously they proved the other night that they can kick field goals to win it too. So all of those things are important to winning championships.
James, let's go now to District 5-4A. A bounce-back performance. St. Thomas More takes down Turlings Catholic at Cougar Stadium. I don't need you to go too much in depth with the game, but what did this statement make, or I guess what type of statement was made from Jim Hightower's group, and have they rebounded fully, you think, from the Westgate ball game?
Yeah, no, I think it shows that they have some resolve about them and that their goals, you know, for the season, which is obviously to win a Division II state championship, weren't lost by losing 2 straight games. I mean, we felt like this was the best team, you know, not only in the area, but one of the best teams in any classification, you know, going into the Westgate game. But then when you lose a game like that, you kind of, you know, reevaluate a little bit. But, you know, there were some external factors that I think were affecting STM. And, you know, but for them to bounce back and to beat their biggest rival pretty handedly, and they did it with defense, which is what they've done a lot of the season. I mean, outside of that Catholic High game, you know, which was a 52-50 shootout, and you have to give Catholic High's offense a lot of credit. You know, they played pretty good defense, and they did that again. Dominic Zepherin, their cornerback is proven to be one of the best defensive backs in the area. He had three interceptions in the game, including a pick six. I think he's got five interceptions on the year. So he's really good. And then, of course, the offense just does what they did. And it was nice to see Jack Besh, play because he was dealing with the back injuries in the Westgate game. So I just think this says that, look, SDM's not going anywhere. They're still going to go into the playoffs as either the one or two seed. And to me, they still should be considered the favorite to win in that bracket. So I think it showed a lot about the Cougars' mental makeup and their resolve.
We're talking prep football with the man. It's James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate. Good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. I want to talk Acadiana High, James, and let's take out all the schools that will be on the Division I side come playoff time. So no Rummel, no John Curtis, no Catholic Baton Rouge. When you take out the private side, what are the chances that the Wrecking Rams are the best 5A school in the state this year?
I think they could be. I mean, their strength of schedule is really good. I mean, having, played a Karen Pro team that should get 7 or 8 wins, having played LCA, which, like you mentioned, is going to get 9 wins. I'm not sure where Ruston is at this point. They're usually a pretty good team. They might be, they played a difficult schedule as it is as well. So they might not get as many points from that game as they normally would. But so if you go undefeated, you're going to have a shot to be either the 1, 2, or 3 seed and probably the 1. And, to me, what makes kind of separates Acadiana this year is their defense. And they did it last week against New Iberia, a team that just came off of a big win against Lafayette High. And, you thought, well, hey, Acadiana's got to come into this game locked and loaded because, Nish is playing with some momentum. But they completely shut down Nish. I think they held them to under 200 yards total offense. And so when you couple the defense with, obviously we know about their running game. That's their strong suit every year with Dylan Monette and Lucky Brooks. And Keontae Williams is obviously a good runner. Titan Zeno, the sophomore, has given them a lot of good reps as well. I think it's a pretty complete team. So we'll see come playoff time. Obviously, they're going to have to deal with Zachary. They're probably going to have to deal with Wes Monroe. But I would be pretty surprised if they didn't get to at least the semifinals. I think they're in that upper echelon of 5A on the non-select side for sure.
An incredibly talented team this year, Matt McCullough's group. All right, James, we'll start to wrap it up and head toward the end here. We spent some time on Class 3A a week ago, and you pointed out, I think pretty astutely, kind of hard to make heads of tails. What do you make out of North Vermilion taking it to Rain? Because I didn't see it happening that way last Friday.
Yeah, no, that one surprised me. I considering Rain had just come off a big win against Eunice and I thought made a statement about where they are as a program in Kane Guidry's first year. They were playing tremendous defense. I think they were holding opponents to like 17 points per game. But for North Vermilion to go in there and shut them down. I mean, and they did that with their top back, Kendrick Bowden, having to leave the game, I think, midway through with an injury. But before that, he rushed for like 3 touchdowns and almost 100 yards. So they not only got great offensive production, also their quarterback, Darius Gilliam, is healthy, which is a good sign to see because I think he was dealing with a concussion a couple weeks ago. But then defensively, to shut them out is really impressive. So North Vermilion is just another team in this really weird year for the Acadiana area, in my opinion, that's kind of, every once in a while will pop up and kind of get and show you what they're made of. And I mean, there's a number of teams that I'm still trying to figure out exactly how good they are. It could be a situation where we get into the playoffs where maybe some of these teams that are struggling or kind of are up and down make a little run because they finally put the pieces together in the playoffs. So, the 3A bracket is always unpredictable, but even in 4A, it could be kind of tricky as well. So it should be a fun year as far as the playoffs are concerned, because when there's that much mystery at this point in the season, that tells you we should see some wacky things in the playoffs.
I'll get you with one more before we let you go, James. A team that started slow that maybe is starting to find its footing, and you're believing in their recent form. I would suggest Catholic New Iberia fits that mold, but anybody else that I'm forgetting about that, hey, they're starting to really get it now and maybe you don't want to see them come playoff time?
Well, it's interesting. I would keep an eye on ERAP is one that I think would be an interesting one to keep an eye on because You know, ERAC was kind of up and down to begin the year, but they beat Kaplan to open up district play last week. And I know they lost a non-district game to Ascension Catholic. Obviously, Ascension Catholic has been in the Division IV state championship game the last couple of years, so it's not a bad loss by any stretch. But ERAC beating Kaplan, which is the first time they'd ever beaten Kaplan since, like, 2007 or something like that, kind of showed me that, hey, that they have a chance to win that district. Now, Crowley is another team to keep an eye on as well. They were kind of up and down to begin the year, and they've now won four straight. So those two teams could be battling for that District 6-3A title. ERAC's passing game, led by Luke LeBlanc, is really good. They had some injuries at the receiver position to begin the year, but they're getting guys healthy, back healthy, so that's a good sign for them. And then Crowley, their running back, Obadiah Butler, is an electrifying playmaker. When he has the ball in his hands, he can make some things happen. And their quarterback, Marquise Garrett, is also a really experienced guy as well. So those two teams, I think, could surprise some people in the playoffs just because they have enough talent and they're getting healthier. And either one of those teams could win District 6-3A.
Always all over the proceedings. James, thanks again. Look forward to seeing you in press box soon, bud.
Absolutely, Ben. Thank you so much.
And our thanks to James Buers. Yeah, I agree with an awful lot of what he had to say there. There are teams that are starting to come into form, starting to turn that form into fruition in the W column. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, we're coming up on week 8. I know for yours truly, I'm looking forward to weeks 9 and 10 for the Karen Crow High games, and myself and Blaine Viator calling. Yeah, week 9 is going to be at STM, week 10 Thursday night home against Westgate. It's that time of year. Officially, put up or shut up. How high can you climb in the polls? How healthy can you be come the playoffs? This is the fun time that we all wait on all summer and August long. And this is just the tip of the iceberg this week for us. Sure, we'll be talking a lot of LSU Auburn, getting you ready for the final Saints game prior to the bye week, but we'll have more high school football talk as well. Every Friday from 6 to 6:30, it's the football night in Acadiana pregame show. And then after STM is done, I know they've got Northside this week, when Danny Jones and company pass the baton to Clint, he'll bring you home late Friday night, the football night in Acadiana postgame show. And it's all on 103.7 The Game. You can, you should stream it as well at 103.7thegame.com. We'll take our final timeout. And on the other side, want to talk a little NBA basketball. Yeah, that starts tomorrow, and we'll discuss it next with Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back at it. Yeah, it's a good day. Bordering on a great day. That's why we continue to talk sports with you. We love doing it. Glad to have you with us. A little bit more of the good stuff. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. I understand that football, hey, it's our jam. And on the other side of this segment, we're sending you to the Meadowlands. Your heart's a flutter, I'm sure, for Patriots at Jets. It is the ender, the capper for week 7. So we'll make sure that you get your football fix one more time. And then tomorrow night, Wednesday night, it's going to be all about Major League Baseball. No doubt about it. It's the World Series. And the Stros have crashed the party second time in 3 years. This whole thing seems to be lining up pretty darn well. I know that the Nationals, after sweeping the Cards, have been kind of waiting in the wings. I know they're healthy. I know they've got a really good 1-2 punch with Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg. I know that there's a pretty formidable group with Houston as well. And since Gerrit Cole didn't pitch over the weekend, he'll be raring to go for game one. So, football, check. Baseball at the highest level, and for only 4 to 7 more games, check. We got all that covered here at Acadiana Sports Station, but I do not want to neglect the start of the round ball season. And yes, I'm talking about the NBA. I think in a lot of ways, the regular season of the NBA is the most over-discussed and over-scrutinized sport that we have in our country. I really believe that. But it doesn't mean you know, like 10 days before Halloween, that I'm not going to pay it its due. Because, what I recognize is this. I think the NBA heading into this regular season has experienced more off-season change than any professional American league in a long freaking time. It makes it fascinating. It makes it relevant. And it means that while I don't plan to squeeze too much lemonade out of the lemon between now and, let's just say, May, I do want to at least touch on what we're about to embark upon, because I think it's got a chance to be really special. Now, don't forget, tomorrow night, the Pelicans and the Raptors officially play the first game of the 2019-2020 NBA season. It'll be north of the border. The Pelicans will be without Zion Williamson. The Raptors will be without Danny Green from last year. More importantly, now two-time NBA Finals MVP and Kawhi Leonard. Both of those guys went different places in La La Land. And so Pelicans at Raptors. Raptors will be 7-point favorites in that one. Your nightcap tomorrow, Lakers 2.5-point favorites on the road at the Clippers. Speaking of Kawhi Leonard, the Claw and Company, he and PG-13 have something that'll be brewing special, I think, in the, I guess we'll call it the Billy Crystal side of Los Angeles, the Clippers side. Nonetheless, Pelicans at Raptors, Lakers at Clippers, and they're off. An 82-game season. And when I talk about more change than we're used to in the offseason, I mean, think about all of the big-time names and faces that traded places. A lot of people in our neck of the woods pretty excited that Anthony Davis, well, that's all folks in New Orleans, go ahead and take your big old self to Los Angeles. Go play with LeBron James. Let them deal with some of the mental babyism. Let them deal with some of the chronic injuries, and everybody at the Clutch Sports Entertainment family can just be happy out there on the West Coast. That's fine. I am still a believer that the Lakers will not make the Western Conference Finals this year. I believe that with all the change we've seen in that conference, the Clippers, to me, are an incredibly big player in this whole thing. I'm not sure that Houston can be written off. They've got two of the last three league MVPs in that backcourt now with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, a couple of guys who are, by the way, first row Saturday night rooting on their Houston Astros. So the Clippers, still formidable. The Rockets, I just gave you. Do not sleep on the Utah basketball Jazz. I think there's a really good chance that if they take the next step forward, Denver out there as well. And of course, how can I forget about the team that has dominated the Western Conference for the last half decade plus? That would be the Golden State Warriors. And even with Kevin Durant injured and moving on, even without the services, maybe for a year or two, I think we're starting to learn of Klay Thompson. Boy, I just wouldn't sleep on him. Steph Curry, he has MVP game when called upon. And without as many people to help him out, it'll be called upon. That plus D'Angelo Russell, I think there's still a chance that that's an awfully good team. So my point to you is this. It's wide open, the landscape in the West, and that's where the Pelicans dwell. You get Zion back. Jrue Holiday, I think, can have a top 5 to 7 in the MVP voting type of season this year. He's that good of a two-way player. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not telling you that the Pels are contenders, but they might contend for that 8 spot in a rough-and-tumble Western Conference. On the East, they've had a lot of turnover as well. Boston has gotten rid of Kyrie Irving. They bring in Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker now with the Nets. He's waiting on Kevin Durant. Won't get him until next season, but Brooklyn will be a new-look team this year. The Knicks have Julius Randle, who came over from New Orleans. They're trying to develop a Shalmation in Mitchell Robinson, now a second-year center for that organization. They made the big trade, getting rid of Porzingis last year. All right, what's that going to look like with the goods they brought back? What's it going to look like with R.J. Barrett from Duke as a third overall draft pick? So, again, some different teams in the state of New York, different look in Beantown, as I mentioned. Philly has gotten rid of Jimmy Butler. How is that team going to look? Is Ben Simmons ready to take another step forward? Butler went to Miami. How's he going to pair up with Bam Adebayo? It's going to be a fun year, I'm just telling you. And I haven't even given all the contenders, really, when you look at the East side. And for so long, it was Cleveland versus Golden State. LeBron leaves the mistake by the lake. All right, it's not Cleveland's deal anymore. It was the Raptors last year. And now all of a sudden, people are wondering, can they still be a top 4 seed overall? and I didn't even get yet to the reigning MVP, the Greek Freak, and arguably the most complete team in the league, the Milwaukee Bucks. And so this has been a stream of conscious rambling of how much change there's been in just one offseason. And unlike, I think, what we all expected or came to expect from the NBA, let's say 2 to 3 years ago, maybe 3 to 4 years ago, take you back to Kevin Durant and his big decision. I think then we all saw this as a league full of guys that had to pile up with one another and super friend this thing to a championship. Yes, a lot of that is still going on, and Anthony Davis is the new poster child for it. However, we have a lot of parity, and there could be as many as 6 to 8 teams that could really win the Larry O'Brien Trophy this year. There might be 10 or 11 teams that have a chance to fit into 8 spots in both the Eastern and the Western conferences. It isn't always this way. And so I think the NBA somehow, some way, has found an opportunity and a direction for its league to where now there's a little bit more parity, and you've got a whole lot of different outposts that really feel like they're going to have a chance to be, well, the force and the driving force in the association this year. So I at least wanted to touch on it. We'll get a lot more Pels heavy in the weeks and months to come, but it's going to be a big season in the NBA. It'll get lost in the shuffle of the World Series, as it should, for the next 10 days plus. It'll get lost in the shuffle of high school, college, and pro football, but now we've given it our due on B2BS. Got to thank a great guest list on a Monday. We always start our week off with Gus Kattengill talking Saints, Ruffin Roderick talking whatever the heck comes to mind for him, and of course, James Buers, you had him on the other side of this break, dominating the scene when it comes to prep football coverage. So my thanks to them, YP, you people out there in listener land, for calling, interacting on social media, and more. And of course, the famous Clint D. My name is Ben Love, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. Pats at Jets coming at you next on 103.7 The Game.